Hey, everybody. This is Doug with Emotional Fair Journey, and I'm happy again to have with me today on the line one Tim Tedder, Counselor Tim Tedder. How are you doing this morning, Tim?
I'm doing good, Doug. How about you?
I can't complain for a nasty, rainy, cold, wet day here in Cincinnati.
Yeah,
but
it is here, too. Yes.
Yep. I'm not sure if this is remnants of Hurricane Zeta or what it is, but we're supposed to get like 4 inches of rain, so not a pleasant day. But I want to thank you for joining me today, and I always like talking with you, Tim, because you and I kind of think a lot alike on different topics and things of that nature. And today, as we talked on the phone last week, we were both commenting on how when we're talking with people, the topic of boundaries comes up quite a bit these days.
Yeah, it does.
And primarily from the betrayed spouse standpoint, but the other way around too. And I know that you recently just came out with a new program called A Fair Healing for Betrayed Partners, and mm-hmm. you touch on some issues of boundaries in that. So I want to kind of talk to you a little bit about that and then maybe get into a couple of the points that you make in that particular program. So hopefully that sounds good to you.
Sounds like a good plan. Let's do it.
All right. So let's start off. What, in your opinion, or in your viewpoint, how would you define, what a boundary is, a relationship boundary?
Yeah, I mean, I think in its literal sense, you know, a boundary is just a designation of a distance or separation between two things. Hmm. So a relationship boundary is some point of designation between two relationships. In a fair recovery, you're dealing usually with a marriage or a relationship that, I mean, even though you're talking about two individuals and there's some, you know, they don't just become one person, so they're still separate. There's a connection. There's an intimacy. There's a oneness there. Mm-hmm. And when betrayal happens, there is a natural separation. But then if there's not agreement on both parties to do their part in coming back together, there has to be consideration of possibly a more intentional distance or separation in that relationship until choices or decisions are made. So, you know, relationship okay. boundaries could actually have to do with the definition of what is our relationship now. It's usually some emotional distancing and separation. It could also be physical distancing and separation, but that's what it includes.
Okay, more like the rules that which the boundaries are, the rules of which the relationship are run, more or less.
Yeah, and it could be that one person is establishing those boundaries. It could be a agreed boundaries by both people. But I think, you know, as you and I were talking last week, we run into situations a lot of times where, you know, it seems to us that boundaries should be established so that there's, you know, an encouragement of healing, either for the individual or the relationship, but that gets all crazy and mixed up with all the emotion going on, and so there's not right. that defined separation that's taking place. But
right.
yes, people need to consider, what does that look like? How do I define that in this circumstance?
Right. Yeah, and what I find, too, in speaking with betrayed spouses specifically, is that they're quite often, more times than not, they're almost terrified to set boundaries for fear of pushing their spouse further away in their minds. And then also, I guess, to kind of piggyback on that, when they do set boundaries, they can be quite hesitant to enforce any of those boundaries, any consequences and things like that for more or less the same reason. So basically they're not working. I mean, do you find that in your practice as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think because of the, it's panic, it's hurt, it's pain, it's fear, it's all that stuff that's rising up in the betrayed partner, men and women. We see it both, you know, both ways. Mm-hmm. In that experience, they want security. They want safety. They want stability. But so often the focus is on the person that caused the disruption, the person that had the affair. And the attempt is, how do I control that? How do I influence that? How do I cause change to happen in that person? And so, yeah, there's that fear of, well, I can't establish boundaries. I've got to be close and try to encourage them back in, push them back in, pull them back in, whatever I need to do. And already at the first sign of maybe hope, to grab onto that. And so really, if you think about what are they trying to influence control over, it's the partner. When you talk about establishing boundaries, you're not trying to control the other person. You're stepping back saying, hey, the only person I really can control is me. And one of the things maybe I need to do is define what the separation needs to be right now in this relationship until and unless we come to an agreement on what we're doing moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And how do you, what's a typical way that people that you recommend that they come to that agreement? You know, is it just an edict from the betrayed spouse? This is what I'm going to accept. This is what I'm not going to accept. Or is it, you know, is it a treaty, so to speak, where they sit down and agree and have an agreement?
Well,
that,
I mean,
you know, yes,
that'd
I can
be
live
great
with that.
If it worked.
No, I can't.
I mean, if there was that level of cooperation in most affair, you know, aftermath, that'd be great. Sometimes there is. Usually there is not. There's tension, there's, you know, a negotiation that isn't, that each has their own interest in mind, and so it turns into conflict more often than not. So again, it's the person that's betrayed typically that we're talking to in this circumstance that we're just encouraging, listen, you need to focus on what can you control? What is your path to healing, you know, look like? And you may hold out hope for a restored relationship. That may be your true desire, but realizing you can't manipulate or control them, you can only establish the boundaries that you need to have for yourself if they're still acting out or if they're uncertain or they're not cooperating with you. Establish kind of boundaries that give you a context in which you heal, and that's what you need to take charge of. So how that's done, it can be a number of different ways. I do think it needs to be declared. It needs to be clear that this is the change. And let me go back to what was said earlier, because this is a really important piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. The person that's establishing the boundaries needs to be thoughtful enough to really consider what their motives are, because you can establish boundaries in an attempt to control the other person. It can be a very manipulative.
Right. I hear that quite a bit, that someone feels they're being controlled or manipulated.
Well, how they feel is separate from what, you know, I mean, despite the true motive, the person that's experiencing the boundaries is probably going to react against them. And they're just going to say, you're trying to control me and manipulate me. But right. I'm more concerned about the one that's establishing the boundaries to really check their motives. This can't be about, well, if I do this, then it'll make them change their mind, or it'll make them come back, or it'll make them stop seeing the other person. It can't be about controlling them. It has to be the boundaries that are important for you to kind of come to a stable place and heal yourself. So it really is controlling yourself, not controlling the other person. That's how healthy boundaries are established. I think it needs to be thoughtful. You shouldn't just decide your boundaries and declare them in a moment of conflict and anger. Step back, be thoughtful. What are those boundaries? What are they going to be? And when you determine what they are going to be, maybe write, I encourage a letter to write it down, and whether you give them that letter or read it to them and then hand it to them so they can read it again later so that it's clear. Be thoughtful. If you still have hope for the relationship, you can even state that. I'm not giving up, you know, but I just can't do this myself. So I need to step back and stop investing in the relationship until you kind of figure out what you're doing.
All right. Just curious, have you ever kind of had to play referee within a counseling setting to where you're more or less helping couples to set these boundaries and such?
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. Yes, many times.
I figured.
Especially
so
new
I think
clients
it's good
coming
to have
in.
A middleman, so to speak.
Yeah, it can be helpful. And that can be a counselor. It can be someone that you trust, someone that you think, you know, has the best interest of the person or the couple in mind, and yet is somewhat neutral, that can help help keep the boundaries firm, or at least help them understand what boundaries might look like in that particular situation.
Well, and I think that last statement you just made is key. And I know one of the biggest questions I get is when I'm talking to people about setting and enforcing boundaries, they're just, okay, what how do I come up with these boundaries? What are some good boundaries that I could do? And what are some good consequences I can enforce? And, you know, they don't want to be too soft, but they don't want to be too severe in their consequences and things like that. So, I mean, walk me through how a person can maybe, is there an exercise or something they can do to maybe figure out what would be best in their particular situation?
Yeah, and I mean, you made reference to a resource that I have available, and we can talk more about that later on. But there's an online course that goes into this a little bit in more depth, mm-hmm. with some exercises and things that can help people go through this. Mm-hmm. But if I'm encouraging someone who's just kind of at the beginning of trying to figure out, should I set boundaries? What should they look like? I mean, there's usually, you know, I will encourage them to, again, make sure you're not focusing on what you expect from the other person. They're going to make their own choices. You need to start by just looking, evaluate, assessing what is it you're trying to do right now to get them to change their mind, to get them to change their behavior. And just recognize that and start with the agreement with yourself that you're going to let go, that you're going to stop trying to be the one that influences or controls those things. You've got to commit to letting that go, and you've got to commit to realizing this is probably going to take some time. It's not unusual that when someone establishes boundaries that the person that's experiencing the boundaries reacts against it. It may initially be anger, it may be defensiveness, it may be blaming, hey, you're the one that's causing the problem now. But sure. But many times there's a quick return to, ooh, I don't like this, I want you back again. And so it feels like, oh, see, it worked, you know, but it mm-hmm. usually takes a little bit longer to really, you know, establish.
Right.
But it's that initial letting go. It's communicating. I give an example of, you know, a letter that can be written, to be thoughtful about it, that you give to the other person. Anybody listening in, we can talk about it. I'd like to just kind of send to you maybe a PDF that walks people through this and gives them an example of what might be the content of a letter. But to be thoughtful about it, write it down, mm-hmm. set it aside for overnight, come back the next day, look at it, and make sure it really communicates what they want to communicate. Mm-hmm. Give that
That'd
to
awesome.
Them, and then be ready to, step back. And there needs to be a change. There needs to be a change in the relationship once boundaries are. Again, you're talking about what is different now. What's the separation between me and my partner now that these boundaries are established? And that usually means you're going to be less invested in trying to be, you know, physically connected with them. And sometimes that is the attempt, you know, to get them back. I've got to stay close to them. I've got to try to show them more affection. We're going to have more sex. We're going to do all of that. And that's all trying to get them to change their mind. You want me. You want me. And boundaries means you're going to be a little less tender, a little less physically available. There's going to be less conversation about relationship stuff. In fact, I encourage people just move to a business of life conversation where you cut out any conversation about how are we doing, until that person is really ready to join you in the process of healing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are some of the things that are necessary.
Well, those are great. And that PDF would be an awesome resource for people. I know that most of the time it seems that when I'm talking to people about it, the situation is such that either the unfaithful person is still in their affair or there's still contact. And they're on the fence, basically, is whether to stay in the marriage or not. So they're just kind of ambivalent about things. And, you know, and it seems like most of the consequences or, you know, the boundaries are, they start off as like, well, no contact, or you have to end your affair. If you don't, you know, a lot of people think that the only consequence that's available is to end the marriage. Or, you know, it doesn't have to be that rash. I mean, it can be other things that, you know, can kind of lead up to that. That may be the last straw kind of a thing. But, I mean, would you agree with that? It can be like a gradual thing. It could even be something kind of obscure, just like saying, well, I haven't figured out what I'm going to do yet, but I'm going to consider all my options, one of which may be leaving the marriage. You know, it can be something like that, where at least you know that you're not going to just let it slide.
Yeah, and there are some people that make a very quick decision about, you know, I'm out of here. You know, this betrayal is too much. I'm not going to choose to ever try trusting you again. And that's their right to make that choice. I think most of the time we see people that are not sure what they want or what they're going to do. They may have been someone that always said, if this ever happened to me, I'm out. But now they're in the situation wondering, am I really out, or is there hope for us? But you know, you use the term uncooperative, you know, partner, and I think of it in terms, sometimes they're uncooperative or they're just confused, and the betraying spouse may say, well, you know, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. I'm not sure whether I'm really committed to this or not. And so you get this ambivalence. You know, at the beginning, it's messy. It's almost always messy. When an affair first comes out, it's rarely just this moment of clarity where everybody understands what happens and knows the path that they're going to follow moving forward. There's a lot of confusion, there's a lot of pain, and there's a lot of uncertainty. So I often look at that beginning stage at, you know, for the one who is betrayed. If they still have question or think they may still want the marriage or relationship on the other side of all of this, if there's any part of them that thinks that maybe that's a possibility, you know, I encourage, at least the term I use is a moment of grace. And that simply means your partner may not deserve this. They may deserve you just leaving right now. But if you choose to kind of hang in there for a period of time and want to give this time, that's kind of a period of grace that you're allowing that to happen. But even in that moment, make sure you're not, you know, in the stance of trying to control. You're trying to change them. You've got to step back and make sure you're attending to yourself, what you need to heal. And if you're so confused and hurt, you're not sure what that looks like, get someone to support you. But that shouldn't last for forever. There should be a period of time when maybe you allow them grace to begin figuring out their own stuff. But at some point, choices need to be made. And that's when, if they're still with a partner who's still saying, yeah, I'm not sure what I want, or I don't know if I can really be in love with you again, then at some point, there's no defined time for this. You know, for some people that may be a few weeks, and for some it may be a few months, for some it may be longer, but at some point they need to step in and say, well, you're uncertain. I still would hope for a healing in our marriage, our relationship, but I can't do that without you being certain that's what you want and your willingness to be part of the change. So there needs to be a shift in our relationship now, and they define what that shift is, what that separation is going to look like, what those boundaries are going to mean.
Kind of off the topic just a bit here, but do you get involved with discernment counseling at all in those types of situations?
Yes. I do.
Okay. Because I would think that's where that would come in then, too, to some degree, would you?
Right. Yes. Discernment counseling, for those that may not know, is an approach that isn't dealing with a couple in the regular marriage counseling or couples counseling, you know, protocol. You're not with a couple saying, okay, well, let's make your marriage better, because frankly, you're dealing with at least one partner that isn't sure they want that, that they're really invested in doing it. So discernment counseling focuses on helping the partners, the spouses, come to a decision about their marriage. And that might be a mutual choice, or it might be one of them declaring, you know what, to be honest, I think I'm done. How do we do this in a healthy way?
Right. And isn't it only like a 4 or 5 session type of process?
Usually, usually 5 sessions at the max.
Yeah, I recommend that to people on a frequent basis who are kind of in that position. So I'm glad to know that you do that. The other thing I want to mention is that, or talk about, is the appropriateness of the consequences. And what I mean by that is, I'll give you an example. I was talking to a client the other day who was unfaithful, but he's basically been doing everything possible to make things right and, you know, change and do everything, okay? But he has a habit of when sometimes they're talking about things, he lets his emotions get away with it, and he'll maybe just get frustrated and walk out, you know, for an hour or two or something like that. And the boundary that was, which, you know, they discussed their boundaries and everything. And the boundary in that situation, if it was happened, was basically divorce. You get the house. I get this. I get that. We split things and go our merry way. And I just thought that was a little maybe too severe for that type of indiscretion. Now, everything's obviously specific to the individual couple and what they feel is right and everything. Right. But, I mean, can you kind of speak to that topic as far as the appropriateness of the consequences and the severity and such?
Yeah, and that's even interesting when I think about consequences in the way that you raise the question. I think I go back to what I want to encourage the person who's establishing the boundaries, usually the betrayed partner we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. And when they're thinking about the consequences that are going to be experienced, don't put so much attention on, okay, what consequences can I come up with that they are going to experience the pain and the difficulty and, you know, the severity of those consequences.
Max pain.
That should not be the focus, because then you're back to, okay, what can I do to change them or to manipulate them or to make them, you know, come to a particular point? That's not the right motive. The consequence should be the natural result of your focus on what are the choices I'm going to do if A, B, C, or D happens in the future. Mm-hmm. What is an appropriate choice for me? And then to your question, you can talk about, all right, let's consider the possibilities. Let's consider the things that might be said or done in the future, and think about what do you want to be intentional in regards to the choices you're going to make. For example, you know, I've had many people say at the beginning of the process, many betrayed spouses say, well, I better have the whole truth right now, because from this point on, if I ever find out another lie, we are done. I'm divorcing you, and this is final. Well, I get the emotion of that, but there's a little bit of alarm that goes off in me, because I know, you know, it's very likely you're going to come up, you know, with something else. If you really want them to be honest, there's something that's going to pop out that either may be a lie or it's going to feel like a lie to you. And frankly, sometimes it's not an intentional lie. It's just things that aren't remembered in the moment that come up later on. So, mm-hmm. you know, to think about, okay, what if you find out new information that seems to be contrary to what they said before? How are you going to respond to that? What if you find out that they're still in contact with the affair partner? What is your response to that going to be? What if you find out that the affair is still going on and they are, you know, spending time with, going out, spending overnight, and they're still lying to you about that? What are the consequences going to be? And there's no rule book that I can put in front of them and say, here's what your choice should be in each of those things. That all of that needs to be determined in the context of each individual, each relationship, and what they feel confident is necessary for them to move forward in a way that's healthy. I've seen people make healthy choices by establishing very severe boundaries way at the start. And mm-hmm. and they did it in such a way that I could tell that's they're coming to that those choices in a healthy way. I've watched other severe boundaries being established way at the start that seemed very unhealthy to me because of the motive. Yeah. And I've seen people wait quite a while in that period of grace before boundaries were established, and they were doing that in a healthy way. And I've watched other people wait a long time to establish boundaries, and it wasn't healthy because they were acting out of need or fear and not out of just that focus on how do I put myself in a healthy place.
Right. And if they're reacting or acting out of need and fear, typically when it comes down to that boundary being crossed, often they don't want to, or they're too afraid to enforce it.
You're right. Yeah. The need or fear puts the focus on more focused on the other person. You know, I don't want to lose them. If the bottom line is you not losing the other person, you're going to do a lot of things and say a lot of things, and boundaries will just be diffused. They're not going to be well established or kept, because you're always tuned into, you know, boy, if they feel like they're going away, I've got to step through those boundaries and make sure they know I'm still here, I'm still holding on, and that's not a good motive for boundary setting.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and depending on the situation, some people will take advantage of that and, you mm-hmm. know, continue to act badly, and because they know that you're not going to enforce the boundary. So it's got to be something that is appropriate for the indiscretion, but also is you're able to enforce it and follow through on it, or it does no good.
Yeah, Doug, I think it's probably important to say too that someone listening to this and thinking, well, I really haven't established boundaries, I probably need to do that. Or maybe someone listening saying, man, I've done this so many times, which makes it harder
right.
for your partner to take you seriously if you ever do come to the point of saying, I need to do this right. But I think one thing I really try to encourage, especially the person that really has never established boundaries, is that be thoughtful, be prepared, know what you want to do, and be intentional about it before you declare, you know, what the boundaries are, the new boundaries mm-hmm. moving forward. Because if you just do it half-heartedly and then, you know, you take them down, it's they're not going to take you seriously moving forward. But
right.
once you do
right.
establish boundaries, I encourage there's kind of a picture or metaphor I use with especially betrayed partners. If you consider your relationship like a house, and the two of you agreed to build this house together, live in it together, and then eventually you find out that your partner's kind of been sneaking out, you know, spending time over in the neighbor's yard, talking to them, and eventually they're kind of going inside the house, spending time there, and coming back. And you didn't know about it for a while, and then you find out, oh, that's been going on. You desperately may want them to come back to your house and have the door, you know, put a little bit more protection around it and make sure that they stay in there. But really, if you're going to trust them moving forward, you need to be very honest about what you desire and what you need. And you need to invite them into that process. They need to be responsible for coming back and establishing the safeties and the protocols and the boundaries and re-earning trust in the relationship. It shouldn't be you taking charge of that. So if you come to the point of realizing that they're not doing those things, they either remain uncooperative or you have indication they're still lying to you, or they're just maybe indecisive, saying, I don't know, I'm not sure, and so all the responsibility falls on you to do the work. That shouldn't happen. Once you come to the place of establishing boundaries, you need to separate yourself from that relationship, and it's almost, they use the metaphor of two guards standing outside of the relationship door. And if your partner comes back and saying, hey, I want to work on this again, there's two questions they need to be certain about. One is, the first guard will ask, you know, are you certain that this is the relationship that you want? Or are you still a little bit confused about it? And they need to be at a settled place. No, I have no more doubt. I don't know what the outcome is going to look like, but I'm certain this is the thing I want to work for. And then the second guard should step up and ask the question, and are you going to take responsibility for working on change? This can't be them stepping back. Okay, I want this relationship, but then saying to the betrayed partner, you know, here's all the things I need from you because I wasn't happy before. So if you promise to do all these things and make our marriage good enough, then I'll come back. And that's wrong. I mean, there may be things that need to be addressed in the marriage, but they need to come back with a sense of, I know this is what I want, and I know we both have to work on it, but I'm willing to work on my part of change. If they can't answer those two questions, if you don't see the sincerity of that, the response to those two questions, keep the door closed, keep the boundaries in place, don't step back in, because you'll be back to the same place rather quickly if you don't.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that was those points you just made, I noticed were part of your new program, and that was mm-hmm. actually going to be my next question, so you must have read my mind. So thank you for addressing that about when the boundaries should be removed. So thank you for that. It's good stuff. Another topic that you had in your program, and you kind of wrap things up for this particular module, I think, with the question, when are boundaries most effective? Can you address that?
Well, they're most effective when, first of all, like I say, the motive is the right motive. When the boundaries aren't about trying to change the other person, the boundaries are just responding to what you need to get to a place, a context of healing and stability in your own life. So it's about self-healing. Yes, maybe still with the hope that your relationship can be restored and that your partner will come back to their senses and come back to the relationship. You may still hope for that or desire that, but you don't take you know, control of that anymore. So the motive is coming from the right place. The intention is the right, you know, from the beginning. And then, you know, the boundaries are clearly stated and understood to the best of your ability. You know, whether the other person hears it or wants to listen to it, how they respond, you can't control that. But you state them clearly. You understand what's required for the boundaries to be taken down. And I talked about the two guards, you know, however a person may say that, so they know what that looks like. That needs to be clear, because it's so easy to establish boundaries. And that's the first sign of change, the first sign of hope. The boundaries come down, and, oh, good, we're together again. And how many times have you heard someone, you know, coming, oh, we're good, we're back, they're back. They're saying they want the marriage. And then the next day, it's back to the old pattern.
Yeah, again. They relapse or something, right?
Yeah, so be very clear, not just the first glimpse of change, but seeing a pattern of change, that then you slowly, the boundaries don't come down just all in one swoop. They come down, you know, slowly, intentionally, and seeing that trust is being reestablished. I think some of those things that some of the things that come to mind, you know.
Great. Thank you. That's good question. Good stuff. Last question before I let you go here, but the often people get boundaries confused with ultimatums. And if you could maybe just touch on what you feel is the difference between the two, and then maybe just give me your opinion on whether you think there are instances when ultimatums can be a good thing.
Well, ultimatums, boundaries, ultimatums, consequences, they're all kind of in the same mix. But again, the question to me comes back to, what is your motive for establishing these boundaries, to making these declarations, to saying these are the things that are no longer appropriate for me, I'm not going to put up with them? All that's appropriate to say. But the term ultimatum, although it's not bad in itself, to me has the connotation of, again, focus on the other person. I'm focused on needing your behavior to be controlled. And so here's the definition of everything that you should be doing. And by the way, if you don't, here's what your consequences are going to be. Now, you and I see that happening a lot. And even what's being said and declared as far as what's needed, we would agree with. And maybe what some of the consequences should be, we could agree with. But when it's presented as an ultimatum, that person is likely either to get defensive and react that way, or they may acquiesce, but I'm concerned about even their giving in to that expectation in that context, because they're avoiding consequences. They're checking things off a list, and that may have a momentary positive effect, but in my experience, long-term, it's not going to really bring about the result that people want. It's not going to lead to intimacy. It's not going to lead to reestablished trust. And if something doesn't change, they're likely to spit out from under that pressure eventually. I'm not so concerned about the content of what's being stated. Again, it goes back to what's the intent or the motive. So it's not about expressing ultimatums necessarily. It's about being very clear in regards to yourself. Here's from this point on, this is what is acceptable to me. This is what's unacceptable to me. I'm not willing to be part of this crazy game that you're playing. I am willing, you know, maybe if this is true, I am willing to work on us, on this relationship. I'm not going to do it alone, and I'm not going to do it with someone who isn't sure that that's what they want, who can't come into this wholeheartedly, and I know it's not going to be perfect. We're both going to make mistakes, but I can't do it alone. I need to know that you're on board with this. And so here are the things that I am willing to put up with. Here are the things that I'm not willing to put up with. And the other person may hear it as ultimatums, but the consequences should just be a clear statement of, if you choose to do those other things, and that's your choice, you know, I'm not going to try to control you. You have the freedom to act well or to act poorly. That's on you. But I am choosing to act this way as a result of that, if you make this choice, if you would contact the other person, if you continue to lie to me, here's the choice I'm going to make. I don't think it's should be considered so much an ultimatum as much as a clear, strong statement of, here's what I'm going to choose to do. And I think there's a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And the key words, if you guys who are listening didn't hear it, it's choice and choose, you know. Those are, that's the big difference, you know. It's not like, you know, your unfaithful spouse in this example, you know, has got their hands tied behind their back and they have no choice. They it's their decision of what they want to do. So that's the big difference in my mind anyway. So
yeah. And let me just say one other thing, and this may fit the broader context of boundaries, you know, not just boundaries between you and a partner, but maybe even down the line, what if a partner comes back and they say, okay, I'm here. I want to work on our marriage and I want to work on our relationship and I want to make this right. Well, there's still a question of what are the boundaries in our relationship going to be moving forward. I want to strongly encourage the betrayed partner not to be the one responsible for establishing and maintaining those boundaries. They should be very clear on what they need in order to feel safe and secure. They need to be very clear on what they need in order to feel comforted from the pain that's been experienced. But all that should be stated clearly, and the person who was the betrayer should be given the freedom to either act on that or not, because that's how trust is reestablished. So the boundaries can be clearly stated. The needs can be clearly stated by the one who's been hurt, who's been betrayed. But the establishing, maintaining of the boundaries needs to happen from the efforts of the person who caused the injury. They need to be the one responsible moving forward for that happening. If it goes the other way, and I'm sure you see this a lot too, the person who was betrayed is always checking and wanting to make sure and having to argue and fight, and so the partner reluctantly agrees, maybe with a roll of the eyes, and they get more and more defensive and resent it. If that's the dynamic, it's not going to change. Trust isn't going to be reestablished. The person who's responsible for keeping the boundaries is going to be the one that stays responsible, and it really needs to shift to be the responsibility of the one who broke the promises in the first place.
Right. Very good. Thanks so much. Now, one of the reasons why you and I are talking is because you sent me an email a while back about this new course that you've got, A Fair Healing for the Betrayed Partners. Maybe if you could just touch on that a little bit and maybe give us some contact information and things like that, and we'll wrap things up.
Yeah, it's one of the courses that's available through mychange.courses. And as you stated, this course is an extensive course. It's based on a manual that I published a few years ago, but I've taken the content of that manual. I'm expanding it. It's growing. Right now, if people go and sign up for the course, they're going to get it at a price rate that's going to be less expensive than it will be at the start of the year, because I'm adding new content. But if you sign up for it now, you have access for a year, and all the new stuff will be there as well. So it's the best time to jump in. So we've got a number of things going on. They can preview that course for free. And Doug, I think you're going to provide kind of a link to that course, from your own site and pages. I encourage people to check it out. It really covers the gamut from when you first find out. It covers not only issues of boundary setting and so forth, but you know, how am I supposed to, how do I get to the truth? How do I know what the truth really is? What am I supposed to do in my response to the affair person? How do I even make a choice to whether I stay or whether I go? And just a number of the primary issues that betrayed partners, experience. And in the PDF that I will make available to listeners that summarizes, some of the content of that course that deals with boundaries, I'll also provide information about that course and a link to it.
Awesome. Well, I can, vouch for, I refer people, mostly unfaithful people, to your Understanding Why program quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I think it's a wonderful course, and this one that you've just put out for the betrayed partners, I've reviewed that as well, and it's up to par with the other one for sure. So it's good stuff. And like I said, I always appreciate the things you put out. So I'm always glad to talk to you, and I appreciate your time and spending it here.
Well, likewise, Doug. We're men with shared passion, desire to help people through this messy, painful stuff of their life. And
yep.
I value your input in helping people through all that too, and the resources you guys provide. So thank you.
I appreciate that. So, well, thank you. And hopefully we'll talk again soon. And otherwise, you have a marvelous day and marvelous week.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, sir.